So, okay, we're on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph.
Okay.
And we're going to count down from the top, approximately 9 lines. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Om Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda.
Om Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, okay.
Okay. So here's what we have. Sholcholem Estil L'Chachonim. It seems that this is 1 year after the miracle, the great salvation of Purim, and Esther sends a message to the Chachamim. Kivuni Lidoros. Now, just by way of introduction, we're going to have two statements back to back of Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. In both cases, Esther is sending a message to the Chachamim.
Right.
The difference between the first message that she sent and the second one is that, and we'll try to understand this, the first message was Kivuni Lidoros, and the second message was Kisvuni Lidoros. So the first is Kvius, to set up something, to enact something. And the second is to write something, or commit something to writing.
Okay.
And in both cases, she's trying to implore the Chachamim to agree, in the first case, Kivuni Lidoros, to be Koveh Purim as a celebration, a day of celebration for all generations, Lidoros. And that means it's going to be a day of Mishteh and Simcha, of reading the Megillah. And Asha found us, so that's good. You're here for the celebration of an upgrade. You didn't see John, right?
No.
I thought I saw him crossing the street, and then I ran over, but he was already gone. Okay, good. So Esther is trying to impose her will on the Chachamim, or at least to influence them to establish Purim. Now, the Gemara is going to tell us why the Chachamim were very inhibited about this whole thing. But before we get to this, and to see how the Gemara spells it out, I just want to show you another Gemara here on Daf Yud Dalet, which is also very similar, and what's going to sort of bother us is why the change. The Gemara here on Daf Yud Dalet, if you'll take a look for a sec, because these two sugyas sort of have to be studied together. So if you'll count down approximately 10 lines down from the top of Yud Dalet Amud Aleph, you'll see the line starts with Tana Rabbanan. And in this Braisa, the Braisa enumerates how many different Nevi'im there were, meaning male prophets, how many different female prophets there were. And then the Braisa proudly announces that v'lo pichsu v'lo hosiru al mashikosav b'Torah, that they never subtracted or added from that which it says in the Torah. Notice they didn't add mitzvahs or subtract mitzvahs, chutz mi mikra megillah. And it seems that mikra megillah is kind of like a breakthrough. What I mean by a breakthrough is that for the first time, historically, the Chachamim, basically with the Nevi'im together, establish a new mitzvah that doesn't appear in the Torah. You know, we're familiar with mitzvahs d'Rabbanan, but many of them are what we call a susyag la-Torah. Like, for example, Netilas Yadayim is a siyag because it's Rach Truma and so forth and so on. So there are many different prohibitions. Maybe Yichud is a prohibition, which is a siyag. But as far as the mitzvah aseh is concerned, That's like taboo. You know, the Torah says Bal Tosif. And the Gemara is now going to spend an entire...
And Chanukah is...
Oh, so Rav Salvation is also point out that when the Rambam codifies the laws of Chanukah, he starts with Hilchus Megillah and Purim, and he has two prokim, and then the last two prokim is Chanukah. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, he has it in the reverse order. Notice the Shulchan Aruch starts with Chanukah because that's the Seder Ayomim. In other words, he's going according to the Hebrew calendar. But the Rambam is more interested conceptually that before we get to Chanukah, we have to know about Purim. Not just for historical reasons, you know, Purim was two centuries before Hanukkah, but much more profoundly, because if not for this breakthrough over here, that the Chachamim finally capitulated and allowed the establishment of a new mitzvah, namely the mitzvah Purim, if not for that, then we would have been stuck with Baal Tosef. Now again, what I wanted to point out to you is that this whole sugya on Daf Yudalid, which Mr. Chen will get to, I don't know if we'll get to it tomorrow, but it'll take a while, that whole sugya tries to justify how the Chachamim were able to add this mitzvah. But it's interesting that our sugya seems to be approaching the same issue about why the Chachamim were inhibited about establishing Purim, but from a whole different perspective. More of a, what I would call a political, sociological perspective. Meaning, once we can figure out the politics of it, and figure out how we can get along with the Goyim, and still establish a day in which we celebrate their downfall, once we get past that impediment, then we can ask more of a halachic, conceptual question. How do the Chachamim have the right to establish a holiday of Purim when the Torah says, Baal Tosef, we're not allowed to add any mitzvahs? So in a sense, again, this is just on a superficial level. There's probably a lot more to say about this on a deeper level, but the difference between the sugya on Daf Zayin and the sugya on Daf Yudalid is the sugya on Daf Zayin is analyzing the question, is it really politically correct? Is it a good idea for Klal Yisrael to establish this day? Now, you and I might say, well, wow, this is a great thing. Hashem saved us. We certainly should commemorate that with a great Thanksgiving. But we're going to see that there's a drawback in terms of our relationship with the Ummah Sa'olah. Once we get by that, then we can convince ourselves somehow that we'll square off with the Ummah Sa'olah, that they won't start murdering us for commemorating Purim. Then we can ask a more fundamental halachic, shall we call it, conceptual question. Do we have the authority to establish a... Do we have the permission to establish a separate mitzvah, which is only Derabbanan? So if you see the response here on Daf Zayin to Esther's request, they said the following. Sholchula, they sent back a message. I guess the Sholchula is referring to the Chachamim of that generation. Kina atma oreres oleinu lebein ha'umos. You're generating a jealousy amongst the nations. We're happy on their downfall. If I remember correctly, in Shushan alone, I think they killed 75,000 people, or maybe even more than that. Do you remember the numbers? I mean, it was quite impressive. And here we are celebrating the downfall of the Goyim. Sholchu lahem. So she sends back a response to try to again convince them. And she says, Kfar ksuva ani, she's referring to herself, meaning the miracle that came about through me, is already written, al divrei ayomim l'malchei modai uparas. In other words, they themselves have already recorded this in their history books. We're not really adding anything. Now here we have to take a look at Rashi to see exactly what's going on here. On the second line of Rashi, he says, Kavuni liyontif ulakriya, lios li l'shem, meaning that this miracle that came about should be for all posterity, we should record it and we should commemorate it. But kina atma reres olenu, sheyomru ha'umos, the nations of the world are going to declare, sha'anu, we the Jewish people, smechim, we're happy, lahazkir mapalosam, to mention and to commemorate their downfall. And that's not something the Goyim could tolerate.
That's part of the big problem of the 48.
The establishment of the state is also like a thorn in their in their side.
And they consider that day a real, you're happy on our downfall. No.
Now it's interesting, the Gemara uses the word kinah, which literally translates as jealousy. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, the word kinah could also have a broader definition. It doesn't only mean jealousy, it means antagonism.
Here, they translate it as wrath.
So wrath. Right? W-R. Right? Wrath. Right. I mean, it's zealots, I think, in English.
Exactly.
They call it.
Well,
but here, I think it means in a certain element of antagonism. So what was her response? So Rashi says on the third line here, Kvar anik suva. Now, as this whole story is recorded, Visham, in their books, those are called the Divrei Hayomim books of Parsum Madai, you roim masha'ir lahem al yidei Yisrael. They already see what the Jewish people have brought about. So it's a little bit unclear exactly what her claim was. I wanted to share with you, I found in the back he has the Alkut Biurim, and he says the following. He quotes Rabbeinu Eliyahu Ashkenazi. I'm not sure who he was, but anyway, he quotes him as saying the following. B'tchila, in other words, when the Chachamim initially responded to Esther, Savru Chachamim, they thought, Shagoyim Yodim Imapolosam, Shoyso Bizmanahu, Chaksha'enum Yodim, Shemapolosam Zu Iro Lehem Al Yidei Yisrael. The history of it I can't figure out, but what he's saying is that it was never clear to the Umos HaOlam that this destruction was a result of, you know, divine supervision and protection of the people of Israel. It didn't come necessarily through the people of Israel. Ukshem Yerush Yisrael Smechim, they're going to put two and two together. When they realize that the Jewish people are commemorating a special celebration, Yomru, they're going to declare Shem Smechim B'mapalosom. Now they're going to make the relationship, the connection between Klal Yisrael and the events that took place. Ubekach Yisoru Lekanos Banu. Again, I think it means antagonism. Heshivalem Esther. So what was Esther's response? Kfar Ksuvani V'chule. Hainu Shagoyim Kfar Yodim. They already know. Ani, here's the emphasis on ni, Shema Palosam Irulehem Al Yidei Yisrael, that it was the Jewish people who brought about their defeat, their downfall. And Cain, Royal Emily Yisrael, Ismach, Lodus Lashem Al Anisim. So once they already know that the Jewish people were protected by God, and a salvation was brought about in which the enemies of the Jewish people were destroyed, Lo Yavo La Orek Kinas Ha'umos. Now, I'm not exactly sure what he means by this. He says that there won't be any antagonism. I'm going to offer two possibilities. He doesn't clarify. This is a little bit ambiguous. He might be saying that the Umos HaOlam will justify, you know, they could tolerate the fact that the Jewish people are celebrating a miracle that came about through God to protect them. They could tolerate that. Another way of interpreting what he's saying is that they don't want to antagonize the Jewish people once they realize that God is on their side. That if God intervenes miraculously to save the Jewish people, this is a nation that we don't want to start up with. So I don't know exactly. He doesn't. But one thing, what do I get from this whole Rabbi Eliyahu Ashkenazi? I see that he's also working very hard here to figure out what was the Havam. You know, why did the Chacham initially feel that establishing Purim is going to antagonize the Goyim? And what was the Maskunish? He said, Kfar Ksuvani B'divrei Hayom Shel Parsum Madai. So what? I mean, you're still antagonizing the Goyim by celebrating and commemorating their downfall, even if it's written there. So he tries to find that missing link over here, that what was missing in the Chachamim's knowledge was that although there was a mapola, they didn't attribute it to the Jewish people. Once the Jewish people start celebrating it publicly, it's like splashed on the front cover, we brought about the destruction. And that's what bothered the Chachamim. You can't establish a holiday which is gonna stick it into them. You know, it's like pins in their side that we brought about their downfall. And then Esther says, well, wait a minute. They already know that we brought about their downfall, but they attribute it to God. That's what he makes a big deal. He says, Shebaal Yidei HaNisim Shashem, you know, that he says it came back. So I don't know, why is the fact that this was a nes min HaShamayim, why is that going to calm down the Umos HaOlam? So either they feel that now the Jewish people are justified because they were saved and God saved them, or maybe they're afraid of the repercussions of starting up with the Jewish people. Okay, so this is part number one. As I said, this is called Kavuni Lidoros. Now we're going to get to part number two, which is called Kisvuni Lidoros. But the Gemara takes a little bit of a break here. This is really totally tangential. What's the word? Tangential. And the Gemara says the following: Rav, Rav Chanina, Rav Yochanan, Rav Chaviva. There's a list here of four different Amoraim Masnu. They recorded the following statement. We're not even ready for that statement. The Gemara immediately interjects here. We'll get to the statement in just a minute. And the Gemara says, Bekule Seder Moed, that throughout Seder Moed, right, we have Shisha Sidre Mishnah, whenever you see in Seder Moed a list, you know, this chain, which we call like a Chagadya, that has Rav, Rav Chanina, Rav Yochanan, and Rav Chaviva, and they're all, you know, we attribute the statement to this whole chain. So Kol Kihai Zuga, whenever you see this combination, Zug means a combination, Chilufei Rav Yochanan, take out the name Rav Yochanan, Uma'aili Rav Yonasan. And it's not really Rav Yochanan who made this statement, but rather it's Rav Yonasan who made this statement. So again, this is sort of a tangent, you know, this is a tangent in which the Gemara wants to tell you that even though we're recording this tradition that we're about to embark upon in the name of Rav Yochanan, or at least he's one of the Amoraim in the chain, it's a mistake. It shouldn't be Rav Yochanan, but rather it should be Rav Yonasan. And this is true over and over again. Now, it's very difficult to know, right? Rav Yonasan and Rav Yochanan are only different in one letter, right? The Ches and the Nun. But it's very difficult to know what convinced the Gemara that this couldn't have been Rabbi Yochanan. So I think the answer is a historical answer, and that is the following. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't belong in this chain. The reason for that is because Rabbi Yochanan was a contemporary of Rav, which means that he was of an older generation. And the Gemara is telling us that Rav is quoting Rabbi Chanina, who in turn is quoting Rabbi Yochanan. It just doesn't make any sense. I'll read to you just one line over here, then we'll go on, because this is totally, totally on the side. He says, Rabbi Chaviva was in a later generation, and therefore it doesn't make sense that Rabbi Chaviva would be quoting Rabbi Yochanan. So in other words, there's no overlap between Rabbi Chaviva and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chaviva actually was a Talmud of Rava. So Rav Yochanan is a first generation Amora. In fact, the Yerushalmi calls Rav Yochanan a Tana. And Rav is already a second and even a third generation, because his Rava is a half a generation before Rava. So how could Rav Chaviva possibly be quoting Rav Yochanan? He didn't even live at the time of Rav Yochanan. But he did live at the time of Rav Yonasan. Okay, now let's get down to Kishkas, you know, to what's really relevant to us. And he says the following. Sholcholahem Esther lechachamim. The subject of this chilufei igros, you know, these letters that go back and forth, is not Purim itself. No, it's even though chachamim have already, as we saw earlier, agreed and acquiesced to establish Purim, that's fine. However, the chachamim here have not yet agreed to create a Megillah, meaning to add another book into the canon of Kisvei HaKodesh. Meaning it's one thing to recite, you know, chapters or read history books about the great miracle that transpired. That will do on Purim. But who says that you could take the words of Esther and commit them to writing and upgrade them to the status of Ksuvim? And that's where she says to them, Sholcholam Esther l'chacham kisvuni l'doros. Let's commit this entire story of the miracle, starting from Vayihi Me'achashvesh until the end of Parsu Madai, to a book, to writing, and then it will be part of Kisvei HaKodesh. Now he quotes here in the footnote a Turi Evan, that's the Shagas Aryeh. He says the following: Mitchila Sholcholem Shikvu Ed Purim Liyontif. The Yikru Bo Es Maisan Nesla. The initial she initially persuaded the Chachamim to establish Purim, and they'll read about the miracle. Once the Chachamim acquiesced, Sholcholahem, let's go one step further, Sheyichtov es Maisan Nes al Megillah l'doros, and this Megillah should be part of Kisvei HaKodesh. Now, you and I might have said the following. Why would the Chachamim hesitate? As we'll soon see. Intuitively, we might have said the Chacham Hesed, because who says that the work written by Esther has the status of Kisvei HaKodesh? You know, something that's incorporated to Kisvei HaKodesh means Shivim Panim LaTorah. We can interpret it. We can look for new interpretations. We can darshan. Was Esther written by Ruach HaKodesh? We're going to have a whole sugya later on where the Koheles was written by Ruach HaKodesh, where the Shir Hashir was written by Koheles. All the different debates that went on over history. You know, today we open up a Tanakh and it's a given, you know, but it wasn't so simple back in the day. What would be incorporated and what was written by Ruach HaKodesh? But we'll see from this Gemara that even though Esther had Ruach HaKodesh, and that was never an issue, however, there's a problem. And the problem is, and I say this by way of introduction, is that Esther really, in terms of its halachic significance, is what we call Zechiras HaMolech. Now you and I might say the following: if HaMolech, you know, attacks us and endangers us and God saves us and spares us, then that has to be written in Kisvei HaKodesh. Why should we be inhibited about that? But the Gemara says no. That the Torah will tell us exactly how many times HaMolech is going to be mentioned in Tanakh. And there's going to be a number. And that number is a ceiling. It's a maximum. We can't go beyond that. So I'm going to read to you later why the Mefarshim get very nervous. Why is the Gemara so hung up on this? If we had a Yeshua from HaMolech, that should be recorded in Tanakh. What's the hesitation? So the Mefarshim claim, I mean, I'm just giving you the gist of it, is that HaMolech means that God's name is incomplete in this world. Ki ka, yud kei al keis ka, milcham Hashem ba'HaMolech. And Chazal say, ein kisei shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu shalem. That as long as HaMolech is out there attacking us, then the name of God is not complete. Whatever that means. Again, obviously there are many, many deeper. This is much too profound for us for today. But the point is that God's hanhag in this world is very limited as long as HaMolech, as long as evil, pure evil, is reigning and controlling the world. And in that sense, the Gemara is very inhibited about mentioning HaMolech. Because it's almost as if the very mention, you know, I'll tell you the honest truth. I was thinking, have you ever heard of a program called Heritage?
Heritage Foundation.
Not the Heritage Foundation. There's a guy named Michael Burrell. I don't know if your daughter went on the program. Many of the MMY girls did. I think in 1 year we had like 40 girls went on the program. They take you back to the camps in Poland. So anyway, it's a very expensive program. Not everyone can afford it. But I went only because they offered me free of charge to go on the program. That's a couple of thousand dollars. And I'm wondering to myself, you know, you go into the camps and they take you right in, you know, they take you into Majdanek, and it's a horrible experience. But the idea is Zohar Sashar Asolcha HaMolech. But we have to be very careful. You know, based on this sugya that we're going to see here, there is a certain inhibition about mentioning HaMolech. On the one hand, we can't forget HaMolech. We have a melchama with HaMolech, and we want to destroy evil. But on the other hand, every time we utter HaMolech on our lips, we're indicating that Kaviyachol, God's reign in this world is incomplete, that there's a force that's anti. And God's name is incomplete. So that's what the Gemara says, that the Chachamim were very, very hesitant here. Sholchula, they said to her in return, Halo kasavti lecha shlishim. Okay, this is a pasuk in Mishle. And Shlomo Melch says the word shlishim, which means times three. And the end of the pasuk is bimo etzos vadas. Now, what does this word shlishim have to do with our discussion? So the Gemara says shlishim, that in three places in Tanakh, HaMolech is mentioned. The attack of HaMolech to the Jewish people is mentioned. Why did the Torah, why did Mishle have to go out of his way to mention three? Velo rebeim, to exclude a fourth time. There can only be three times. The maximum number of times that we'll have HaMolech in Tanakh is three. And therefore, we're not allowed to write your miracle as a book, because your miracle is a salvation from Haman, who's Zera Molech. So, you know, the theme, so to speak, of there are two themes, if you will, of Megillas Esther. One is HaMolech coming to attack us, and number two, the salvation of Hashem. But we can't describe the Nes without describing HaMolech. And the Torah says that three times is enough. Now, what are these three times? So Rashi explains what these three times are. And he goes through the, this is about eight lines down from the top. He says, "B'shloshim makomos yeshlan lahazkir milchemes amalek." Now, he starts with Sefer Shmos. In Sefer Shmos, and then he has a Mishneh Torah, Ube Sefer Shmuel. Now, this is really interesting because the truth is that in Sefer Shmos, if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, Amalek is mentioned twice. But since it's within one Sefer, it's called once. So in how many different books of Tanakh is Amalek mentioned? In three books. In the book of Shmos, in the book of Devarim, and in the book of Shmuel. So in Shmos we go to Parshas B'Shalach, and in Devarim we go to Parshas Ki Tetze, and then we jump forward to Shmuel. Shmuel, as you know, is going to command Shaul HaMelech to go out and battle against Amalek. V'zeu Shomer Shlomo B'dvar Shishliso, meaning three times, V'iyata Rashoi L'Ravo. You're allowed to make it three times, but not a fourth time. And that was the flak, or I should say the resistance, that she met up with when she wanted to incorporate the story of Megillas Esther, the Nes of Purim, into Tanakh. Now, in Chumash, it says the following. Let me just get this up before I forget this. It says the following. Ksov zos zikar basefer, ki macho emcha es zecher amolek mitachas hashamayim. So here, at the end of Parashat B'Shalach, God pledges that you should record in a book, meaning in Chumash, the mice of Amalek. They came to attack the Jewish people when they left Mitzrayim. And I, meaning God, says, I promise you that I will destroy Amalek. Then we get to Chumash Devarim in Parshas Ki Tetzei. There the Torah says, Zohar says, Sharasul Chol Amalek, etc., etc. And then it says, Macho Timcha Zeich Amalek. That's already a command on the people of Israel. They're obligated to destroy Amalek. And in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, in the 15th chapter, it says, Pakadati, this is Shmuel's opening line to Shaul HaMelech, Pakadati es asher os Amalek liYisrael. I remembered what they did to Israel. So that's what we have here. Three times it's mentioned in Tanakh. Oh, so finally they capitulated. Why did they eventually capitulate? So they found another pasuk. What other pasuk did they find? He says that shematzalo mikra kosuv batorah. They found another pasuk that says ksov zos zikarn basefer. Now, What did the Chazal find in this word ksov zos zikar basefer? Rashi says that was the first of the three times that Amalek was mentioned in the Tanakh. So there's a drasha over here. The drasha is telling me to write this as a zikar basefer. What does that mean? Ksov zos mashakosuv kan. In other words, what it says here in Shmos, that the people of Amalek attacked the Jewish people on their way out of Mitzrayim, record that in a sefer. Okay? And it says, U b'mishne Torah, in other words, that the reason why the Torah repeats itself a second time is because the Torah wants to tell you, as we said before, in Mishneh Torah, that we're obliged to destroy Amalek. So we have the following. Ksov zos means write down and record the attack of the Amalekim, and that's in Sefer Shmos. Then in Mishneh Torah, it's zikaron. You see how we're going through every word. We're going through ksov zos. Zos is a reference to Sefer Shmos. Zikaron is a reference to Sefer Mishneh Torah. Just one second, did I get this right? And then finally, Zikaron, just one second, there should be three words here. Oh, Uba Sefer, okay, so we didn't get to Uba Sefer. So let's start again, I'm sorry, I skipped one word here. There's Ksov, there's Zos, there's Zikaron, and there's Basefer. So the Ksov is a reference to Shmos. And Zos is a reference to Mishneh Torah, and then Zikaron is a reference to Shmuel, and then Basefer is Mashikos of the Megillah. So the word Basefer is an allusion to the fact that we can write, and we should write, the Mice of Haman and Zera Molek a fourth time, and that's going to be in the Megillah itself. There's a business here in the Mefarshim about exactly which pasuk the Gemara is darshaning, because the Yerushalmi has the same drasha as we have here in the Bavli, with a different pasuk, a pasuk at the end of Tanakh, in Malachi. It says, Vayichtav b'sefer zikaram. Again, the same three words. And the Yerushalmi says that the extra word in that pasuk is going to be the base for the fourth mentioning of Amalek, which is Megillus Esther. However, again, as I said before, why are the Chachamim so hesitant and so inhibited about adding another mention of Amalek? So I'm going to try to see if I can find the paragraph that I wanted to read to you. Oh, first of all, there's a whole discussion here about why the Chachamim at this point didn't mention Ein Navi Rashoi L'Chadish Dovah. That's interesting. But the point that I really wanted to get to is the following. Because of Rashi, v'shloshim makomos yesh lanu lahazkir mechias amolek. Hatam, shehutzuch lahazir shlishim v'lo rebeim al mechias amolek. We don't find that there's such a prohibition against any other mentioning. So he says here that Omru chachomim, ein Hashem sholem at sheyim chazaro shel amolek. V'yesh chasha shemitoch kach, unbelievable. It's a gnai in the original hesitation here. It's something negative to mention Amalek. Wow. We need a special mat here, so to speak, a license. He says, Yesh la'akshos im sovru b'tchila she'toru mishne toru nechshavim li echad. My hukshalem klal. Just 1 second. So let me just get this down. Rashi says that kol haTorah nikreis sav echad. Zos zikaron b'sefer. Im sava b'tchila shetorah mishne Torah nachshav echad. My hukshalem klal. I see what's going on here. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi, Dibra Masil Zos, it's about 15 lines down from the top. Zos, Mashakosuv Kan, Ube Mishneh Torah. Zos, Mashakosuv Kan, Ube Mishneh Torah. Do you see what goes on over here? In other words, Rashi is bothered by the following, that you really can't separate from these two words, ksov v'zos. If you combine them as one entity, then you're only left with three words in this pasuk, and we want to generate a fourth. So Rashi says that the ksov zos could generate two times. Why? Because Rashi says, and I lost the place here, to kol mashakos of the Torah, meaning whether it's in Shmos or in Sefer Dvarim, is korei ksav echad. So when it says in the pasuk ksov zos, the ksov zos is a reference to all of chamisha chumshei Torah, which gives you two, and then you have zikara, which is giving you the third, and then you have basef, which gives the fourth. So he asks the following question. He says, im sovru b'tchila shetorah mishneh Torah nechshav ke'echad, ma hukshalem klal. They wouldn't have asked any question if they agreed with Rashi that both Shmos and Mishneh Torah is considered one, because then we can add Megillah. We're still within the context of three. He says, "Ve'im somer shem nechshavim l'shnayim." If they held that the two parts of Torah, meaning Shmos and Dvarim, are considered two different entities, so to speak, is ma matzu case b'pasuk zeh? So how does the Gemara now say that they calmed down? They finally agreed to Esther because they read the pasuk as ksov zos, referring to both sefer Shmos and Sefer Dvarim, meaning they hold that you need two different psukim, one for Sefer Shmos, one for Sefer Dvarim. Sharei pasuk echad lo muchach shatorah mishneh nechshav liechad. So he has a list of four different answers to this question. I didn't get a chance to read this through. Maybe we'll do it at another occasion.
Rashi's just citing Zos Mashatuv, but in the Gemara it's the Sovzos. It has both words. So, I mean, the simplest reading is that it is two words they're referring to. It's one and two, and it's one and two statements in the Torah.
But look at the lashon of the Gemara. The Gemara says the following: Ksov zos,
right?
And it says Mashiach kosov kan u mishne Torah.
But there are two words it's referring to. Whereas Rashi is just citing zos Mashiach. He leaves out the
zos. What does it mean, Mashiach kosov kan?
Rashi is saying, I think, if I read this correctly, that ksov zos means write this in the Torah. Ksov zos. It's not that each word is a separate entity, because there's no reason to say such a thing. If there are words here that indicate groups or entities, that's one thing. So Rashi says ksov zos. That's not two different writings. That's ksov zos. Write this. You can say zikaron is a different concept. Or sefer is a different concept. But ksov zos means write this. That's one concept. So how do we produce four if you combine ksov and zos? So Rashi's answering that ksov zos means write it twice within the Torah, because the Torah is considered one entity. And the key word in Rashi is echad, zikori ksav echad, that all that's written in the Torah, zos ksov, or ksov zos, is also one entity.
So
if you're saying it is one entity, then you have an extra word at the end of the pasuk, namely basefer, that's going to teach you an extra the fourth time around.
So is that the Chachamim went back and they were originally reading this as Ksov Zos is Shmod Zikaron is Mishneh Torah and Masechta, and then they decided to reread it and say, well, maybe Ksov Zos is referring to both.
Well, he's saying that it doesn't make any sense, because Mimonoshav, if they read it as Ksov Zos is referring to both as one entity, then you're left with four, right? Because you have two, and then three, and then four.
So maybe they changed their mind, though. Maybe they went back and we read it and said, okay, well, we can read it.
So he says the following, that if, on the other hand, if the Chachamim held that this is considered two, so what did they hesitate in the... In other words, we don't understand the Havamina the Maskana. What was the Havamina to say that Ksov Zos refers to... Refer that if ksov zos again is
oh,
what?
Oh, wait,
if it's two, then we're okay.
Right.
If it's one,
but look how it's written. Wait. Maybe it's because look how it's written. It says three times. They talk about it being written three times, and then until they found ad shematsu lo mikra katu b'torah. So they found this verse. Maybe it's because they were thinking three times. There was the other verse, because it's twice in Shmos. It's twice in Shmos and once in Mishneh Torah. So until they found this verse, then they were just looking at once in Shmos and once in Mishneh Torah. And when they go back and look at this verse, they say, wait a minute, we've got three references to deal with in
So I don't know if that's the case. I'll tell you the truth. At this point, I think because of the time limitation, I'm going to blee neder. If I have time, I'll make myself a note. He's got four different approaches to understand the Havamina and the Maskana here. I'd rather be more oriented on this. Let's just spend 2 minutes or so reading the next line in the Gemara, because this finishes the entire sugya. The Gemara says Kitanoi. In other words, this drush itself, which is coming to include the fourth sefer of that mentions Amalek, is a subject of Machlokas Tanoi. The Brisa says the following. So the Brice is going to record a machlok between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lozer HaModoi. First we get to Rabbi Yeshua. Ksov Zos. And he's learning Mashakosov Khan. In other words, he's not willing to say, as we saw in the Maskot of our previous sugi with Rashi, that Ksov Zos is referring to both Shmos and Dvarim. So therefore he needs two psukim, one for Shmos and one for Dvarim. So Ksov Zos is Mashakosov Khan, that's a reference to Shmos. Then we have Zikaron, is Mashakosov Mishneh Torah. So that refers to Sefer Dvarim, because I needed the Ksov Zos for Sefer Shmos. Then when we have Basefer, is Mashakosov Neviim. Divrei Rav Yeshua, so then it comes out according to Rav Yeshua, we have no basis for going beyond the number three. And we're back to the simple pshat in the pasuk in Mishle, which seems that there are only three mentions of Amalek. In other words, the Ksov Zos is referring to the entire Torah. The Kamisha Kumshay Torah is one entity, And therefore, the Ksav Zos could cover not just one writing, one mention of Amalek, but two. And then we have Zikar, Mashakosav, and Neviim, Basef, Mashakosav, and Megil. So basically, what the Gemara is saying here at the end is that this Shakla Vitaria between the Chachom initially, that they only saw three in the Pasuk, and the Basefer was needed for Shmuel, and the Maskana of the Gemara, which the Chachamim accepted and Esther prevailed, that Basefer is a reference or an allusion, I should say, to a fourth time, that really is the subject of the Machlokas here between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lozar Modoy. So basically, Rabbi Osai, what we're going to try to do then tomorrow is to present the following, that initially the Chachamim were thinking in the mindset of Rabbi Yeshua, and ultimately they accepted the mindset, the approach of Rabbi Lozar Modoy.
Now, well, Rabbi Yeshua is way after this discussion between the Chachamim and Esther. So how come he's still holding?
Well, you know, I would ask you a question slightly differently, meaning according to Rabbi Yeshua, how did the Chachamim capitulate and accept Esther as one of the books? If we only have an allusion to three, right. I mean, that's going to be an interesting question. Now, the rest of the sugya here, which Belineta will try to do tomorrow, is a discussion about which books are actually considered Kisvei HaKodesh. And it's interesting that the barometer, you know, the litmus test to figure out whether a particular book is part of Kisvei HaKodesh or not, is a halacha in Tuma Vitara, which is called Tumas Yodayim. Because the Chacham made gzeirah that a book of Tanakh is metame Tumas Yodayim. So the Gemara is going to ask whether Esther is metame Tumas Yodayim, meaning was Esther written in Ruach HaKodesh, and therefore, it could be elevated to the status of Kisvei HaKodesh and metame Yodayim. The Gemara is going to ask then, what about the status of Koheles? What about the status of Shir HaShirim? And on every level, the Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth whether it was written by Ruach HaKodesh, whether therefore it was canonized and incorporated into Tanakh, and therefore is it Metami Tumasi Yadayim. And the final maskot of the sugi is that yes, Koheles, yes, Shir HaShirim, yes to Esther, and all of these are going to be accepted at the end of the day, but after a lot of vikuach back and forth, as being written by Ruach HaKodesh, and therefore part of Kisvei HaKodesh. So Belineta, we'll pick that up tomorrow, okay then? Yeah. And I'll try to get back to this question about whether, you know, whether Ksov Zos is referring to the entire Torah or different parts of the Torah, and so forth and so on.